Okay, folks, I am here to educate, motivate, and what's another something that ends in eight? Eradicate. How about that? All of your previous thoughts about car dealers, because there are some good ones. People who follow good moral and ethical behavior. And I'm not the only one. There are many. Many of us. You know, a lot of dealers participate in helping shape the laws that regard, or that basically determine, supposed to determine, dealership behavior. In Tennessee, where I'm located, it is called the Tennessee Motor Vehicle Commission, and they determine who is going to be a dealer. They grant licenses to people like myself. You know, I could actually buy a dealership, let's say a Chevy dealership in Nashville, Tennessee, and apply to the Motor Vehicle Commission, get turned down, you know, because I have something in my record. It doesn't happen very often, but, you know, if you're a previously convicted felon, you're going to have a hard time to get a dealer license in the state of Tennessee. But that's not the only standard. There are others, you know, as far as facilities and stuff like that. The biggest hurdle, though, is to become a dealer is basically the what the manufacturer requires you to do and the capital investment that is required. You know, they won't let somebody that was just running a big bank with, you know, $50 million, they'll lay that on the table and say, I want to be a car dealer. That's probably not going to happen. You've got to have somebody with experience. They will let you buy a dealership if you've got somebody that has experience to run it. And I guess the main reason the manufacturers are a little conservative about this is because they don't want to see you fail. It's too much work to put in a new dealer. It damages the reputation in the market area, you know, if a dealer comes in and lasts a year. So, but I've been around a long time. My dad started it a long time ago, and I've carried on the tradition, and now my kids are, so, and my nephew and my son-in-law. So we're just a family business, and hopefully we can survive as a single point new car dealer. Well, we have two franchises. I don't think you could get two better franchises together than Ford and Nissan. You know, maybe Toyota is better, but they don't like the dual. None of them like to duel. That means when you have two franchises in one facility. Matter of fact, Nissan made me build a new showroom. They said, you are not going to be a Nissan dealer unless you build us a showroom in a separate service drive area. I said, okay. So I had to investigate what that was going to cost. And once I saw that that was not insurmountable, I decided to sign on the dotted line and became a Nissan dealer. And boy, have I enjoyed it. It's a great brand. They build great products. They have a very diverse product line. We used to be a Mazda dealer. And Mazda, you know, great brand, love the company, but man, tough sell sometimes. It is tough to sell a Mazda 6, for example, against a Honda Accord. It was in the past. You know, when we became Mazda dealers in 1977, I was in college, and I was actually just reading a Sports Illustrated magazine, sitting on my bed at the fraternity house, and my dad had tried to get the Fiat franchise because he was just trying to get something, you know, to come to Greenville, Tennessee. Toyota wouldn't come. Datsun was already taken. There was no Hyundai and Kia and so forth. So he wasn't able to get the Fiat franchise, thank goodness. And I was reading this magazine article, and it was talking about the new Mazda GLC. Well, I thought Mazda just built rotary engine cars, and they weren't doing really well, you know, because of the energy crisis. But they rebounded and came out with this little four-cylinder car, little bulbous-looking thing, in a two-door and a four-door. And I called my dad, and I said, Dad, let's look at Mazda. Well, about, I don't know, 6 months later, we're a Mazda dealer, and they're delivering 30 Mazda GLCs to us at once. I think they sent us a couple rotary engine cars, an RX-4, an RX-4 wagon. I'd love to have those back again in new condition. And I think they sent us a Mazda B-Series truck. But we had a great run as a Mazda dealer. But it's tough now. Mazda is doing their best to go upscale. They want to be like an Acura or an Infiniti or Lexus. And I think they have a ways to go as far as reputation to get there. They build great products. But I had to make a decision. I was we had Ford and Mazda in the same building. I said, do I want to be a Ford Mazda dealer or a Ford Nissan dealer? Well, Nissan is just so much more diverse product line, with big trucks, small trucks, you know, just all kinds of good stuff. And so I called my Ford rep, and I said, he's the market area representative. He's the guy that tells you whether what you can or can't do as far as, you know, bringing in a new franchise or whatever. And I said, I would like to bring in another franchise. No, no, you cannot bring in another franchise. We will not allow that. I said, well, how come? I mean, I'll build them a separate show. No, you cannot bring another franchise onto that lot. So they were protecting their turf. I said, okay, well, what if I give up a franchise like Mazda? And then can I do it? He said, well, send us a proposal and we'll think about it. Well, I did, and they approved it. And then I had to get approved by Nissan. And that was, you know, it's a long process. It takes about 90 days. And so eventually, once I agreed to build them a new showroom and service drive, and then we signed all the paperwork, all of a sudden, voila, I was a Nissan dealer. Now, the Nissan dealer was up the road. And I bought I purchased the assets. If I buy a new car dealership, if you want to buy one, you're going to do it one of two ways. You're going to buy the corporation, which owns all of the assets, you know, the business, or you're going to just buy his assets, which would be his, you know, like, I don't know, parts and parts bins and furniture, you know, if he's completely selling out. In my case, this guy was a Chrysler Dodge Ram Jeep. Yeah, Plymouth has been gone for a long time. And so anyway, I wasn't buying that part. I just wanted the Nissan assets. So we agreed to a deal, and I bought the assets of his company. Now, why wouldn't I want to just buy his corporation? Well, in this particular case, his corporation was still going to be in existence, so he didn't want to sell it to me. But if you buy a corporation, you also buy all the liabilities of that corporation. You know, what if they've got somebody suing them, or somebody that is going to sue them? You know, you don't want to buy an unknown entity, basically, and what could happen for that. I mean, so, let's say somebody comes up and it's within the statute of limitations and something happened 6 years ago and they sue you for something that one of their salespeople did. Then that's the danger of buying a corporation. So I bought his assets. And once we got approved and everything, we went up to his lot and in his the dealer's office, signed all the paperwork, and then started moving cars down here to Gateway. And that's pretty much the way it happens. And then you got to put up a sign and all that stuff. So we did basically with just a sign on a Ford lot selling Nissans for about 2 years until we were able to get our building built. Just amazing what having a brand new showroom. You know, you wouldn't think it would make that much difference that people are, you know, more interested in the cars, but it makes a big difference. I mean, it put us on the map as far as Nissan. And since then, I mean, we broke a record in our market. The most Nissan / Datsun product that had ever been sold in a year was sold in Greene County. And keep in mind, Nissan has been here since 1970. We sold the most that had ever been sold in this market, and that was last year. So we hope to keep going. This pandemic is kind of squashing us and everybody else. Well, it's really not the pandemic. It's the result of the pandemic, which is the chip shortage. And we're still facing it. And we're going to be facing that for several more years, folks. We thought that thing would turn around, but it's not. You know, sometimes I think I just wonder, this thought creeps into my brain. Is this just a conspiracy? Is this whole chip shortage just a way to raise prices on cars and to eliminate a lot of selection on dealer lots so that maybe even dealers can sell cars for more and that the manufacturer can still be really profitable because they don't have to pay floor plan assistance to dealers? And, you know, it's really transforming the business into more of an internet-based and built-to-order type of thing. I mean, I used to think that we had to have 200 Fords in stock and 150 Nissans and you know, maybe 150 used cars in stock, or we couldn't sell anything. You know, you had to have selection, and you had to have one of everything. And you just, you know, they're trying to get away from that. Because think about if you have, you know, $10 million worth of cars and your floor plan rate is 10%. Look how much interest you have to pay every year just to carry that inventory. And right now, my carrying costs are just about zero because we have every dealer has such much lower inventories than they used to have, and therefore their carrying costs just aren't there. And the manufacturer normally subsidizes that for the first 90 days. So think about how much less money they're paying out when you have 3,500 Ford dealers and 18,000 dealers in total. The manufacturers have said, wait a minute here. We can do it this other way, and we can make more money. Now, we won't be able to sell as many cars, but if you sell every car for more and you don't have to incentivize people to buy cars. I mean, I think about probably 2.5 years ago, we had a total of about $10,000 in rebates and incentives if somebody bought an XLT F-150. So where's that come from? That comes from the manufacturer's pocket. That doesn't come from my pocket. So you come in and buy a car, we take $10,000 right off the top. You know how much you get right now on an F-150? Zippo. There is no rebate, no incentive. Sometimes they'll have 0% financing, but they used to do it for 72 months, and now they do it for 36. Well, who can afford that monthly payment? So, you know, this industry is evolving right before our eyes, but it's not evolving like normal evolution. You know, it's not like from the dinosaurs to us. It is much faster than that. And it's happened, really, that the acceleration of it has been in the last 18 months. And all of these manufacturers are looking at their business plans and saying, okay, how can we keep these costs down yet deliver the amount of inventory that we need to deliver to be extremely profitable and make our shareholders happy? Because that's what it's all about. You know, they care a whole lot less about market share than they used to. Yeah, Ford still, you know, they've had leadership for, they've had the number one selling truck for 46 years in a row now. They're not going to lose that. I think they have a lead right now of about 80,000 units over General Motors or over Chevrolet. Now, if you take GMC trucks and Chevrolet trucks, add that together, they sell more than Ford does, but they're different brands, so they can't get by with that. Occasionally, they try to sneak that in there, especially if it's a dealer that sells Chevrolets and GMCs. But Ram is not too far behind. You know, Dodge, which became Ram, they used to be kind of an also-ran when it came to truck sales. They couldn't get it done. But about 5 years ago, they started really catching up. And Chevrolet dealers and Ford, you know, we didn't take the Ram truck seriously. We do now. I mean, they build a remarkable product. It's, you know, very luxurious if you get to higher levels of trim. They do a really good job. And you know, the younger generations, the millennials and on down, they really like Ram trucks. They're not all hung. They think F-150s are for old guys like me. So, you know, it's changed. And things will continue to change in as we move along in this industry. Well, I'm going to take my first break, and I'll be back here in just a second. Okay, I know you're all upset because of the federal funds rate hike, the Fed. What does that mean when the Fed raises the rates? Have you ever dug into that? Why does that impact the rate of inflation? You know, what they talk about is they're trying to slow down this economy, right? If they slow things down, then people won't be throwing as many dollars at consumer goods and houses and things like that. They won't be borrowing as much money to do that on credit cards and, you know, on commercial loans, really for business as from the commercial side, or individuals borrowing money for different things. Home improvements and stuff like that. They want to slow that down. And so they talk about these rate increases. So the Fed just met, and they're going to raise the interest rates 0.75%. Now, if you're in a banking business, you know what they call that? They have to use a different language. They want to be really cool. They call it, they raise the rates 75 basis points. So 1% to a banker is 100 basis points. Why don't they just say 1%? Why do they have to do that? It makes them feel important. So anyway, interest rates are going up 0.75. So what does that mean to you? Well, your credit card interest rate if you are paying interest on your credit cards, it's going up. Mortgages are going to go up. We're talking about the Fed is saying, okay, rates are probably going to top out at the end of 2022 in somewhere around the 4.25 to 4.5 range. So I'm sorry, folks, but why would anybody complain about that? And why would that slow things down? That is a tremendously low interest rate. I know it was like the Fed fund rate was like zero during the Great Recession, and they've had to crank it back up. But, you know, 4.5%, I mean, that's, I remember when I bought my house in 1980, I know, I'm going back in time, sorry. But prime rate was 18%, and I was able to assume the mortgage, you can't do that anymore, I was able to assume the mortgage that, my wife's parents had. Yeah, we bought their house from them. I paid $39,900 for my first house. They had a 6.75% rate through Home Federal. And then they financed the remaining amount with for me. So I just, and I paid them 7.5%. They shouldn't have done that to me, but I understood. Especially when rates are, you know, 15 to finance a house right back then. So anyway, you know, I look at that and I say, I look at this 4.5, and I really don't understand how that's going to slow things down. I think they're going to have to really get it up there even higher than that. I hope they don't, because I don't want to sell fewer cars. I know builders don't want to build fewer houses. You don't want to have to sit at home twiddling your thumbs and, you know, watching Jeopardy, I mean, or Wheel of Fortune, and not be able to go out to eat and stuff like that. Well, it is kind of tough for a lot of people right now, just going out to eat and trying to buy things. It's really expensive to go out and buy a car right now, but sales are still pretty good. You know, the industry is going to be very profitable at around 14 million sales this year. Now, keep in mind, 5 years ago, it was 18 million. So a lot of inventory has been taken out of, it's just not as available as it was. So what that means is that, you know, it's what I learned in my first quarter of economics at the University of Tennessee. When the demand goes down, the prices go down. And when the demand goes up, the prices go up. So that's exactly what the Fed is trying to do. They're trying to push down on demand. By restricting interest, or by raising interest rates, it'll keep people from wanting to borrow money. That makes sense? Well, the good side of that is if you have a lot of money, you have cash, you know, you can buy CDs at the banks because they're paying a higher rate of interest. You might want to buy treasury notes. Treasury notes, you know, that's how the government raises all this money. They have to borrow all the time. You know, they talk about the $32 trillion debt that we have, whatever it is. Well, how do they pay bills when you're that much in debt? They get all their money from taxpayers. The rest of the money comes from you and me, people who buy treasury notes. You can actually buy a treasury note for $100. And I think they're paying around 4.5% right now, which is really good. You know, that is a bond, basically. So bond values go up and down. Before, I'm not giving financial advice here. Before you ever invest in stocks or bonds or even CDs for that matter, you need to talk to your financial advisor. I am not a financial advisor. I'm just trying to explain what some of this stuff is and how it interacts. We are seeing a slightly decreased demand right now. And maybe it is interest rates. Maybe it's just the time of the year. Seems like this time of year things always slow down a little bit. More interested in high school and college football. With that, I will take my last break, and I'll be back here in just a minute. Got an interesting recall going on. You know, gosh, Ford recalled 8 million vehicles last year. But every manufacturer, you know, recalled a bunch of vehicles. Why is that happening? Well, it's happening, according to the experts and people that I've talked to, is because they have had such a hard time finding good people to work in the supplier companies. And most of the parts that are put in the modern vehicle are basically manufactured by somebody else. It's not manufactured by Ford or GM or Honda. There are other companies that supply, you know, they may make the dash pads and the seats or the transmission or whatever. And so there's a lot of recalls. You may have heard about the 200,000 Nissan pickups being recalled for the risk of rolling away while in park. Now, wouldn't that be fun? I made the mistake one time of chasing after a car that had rolled away, and I tried to get in it, and I ended up falling and cutting myself pretty badly. The car, you know, so I ended up with a wound and a dented car as it plowed over the mailboxes. Don't chase after a car. It's a good way to get run over. But Nissan pickups, apparently, I think they've had less than 0.1% failure rates, but they were calling all of them. Matter of fact, a lot of the inventory that I have right now is, I can't sell it. It's on a stop sale. If I sell it, I'm in big doo-doo. So I'm not going to sell it. They'll be available pretty soon. What Nissan was doing is the little parking paw, you know, that's a little thing that basically just like a finger that sticks up and gets in the middle of the gears and keeps the vehicle from rolling. Okay? So when you're putting it in park, that little thing is kicking in. Well, the parking paw was not doing what it's supposed to do. And so they went into transmissions and stuff, and they started replacing parking paws, and it was still doing it. You know what they figured out? Software. It was a software problem. So we're waiting on this software fix to come online, and then we'll have to bring all of our Frontiers and Nissan Titans into the shop, plug them into the computer that we use, and update the system. That's one of the reasons why I never want to buy a car that drives itself. Because, you know, that's a pretty big deal. You're going down the interstate, 75 miles an hour, reading the latest edition of the New York Times, not paying attention to anything, and all of a sudden your car decides to turn right. And, you know, oh, and of course everybody is injured, and you know the car is destroyed, and what do they say? We had a recall. Hello, recall on that software issue. We had some guy up in Michigan that didn't know how to program it and messed up. I don't want to let some little, you know, Gen Xer in Michigan drive my car for me, you know, because he programmed it wrong. So I'm gonna drive it myself. I hope you do too, and I hope you drive it right down here to Gateway. And come see me sometime. This is Lenny Lawson, the Car Guru. And my cell phone number is 423-552-2020. If I can ever help you with any decisions. I've had a guy came to me the other day and said, Lenny, I want to buy an old car. You know, what's a good antique to buy? Boy, you talk about a broad question. So we had to nail it down, and we honed it down to what he really likes are cars from the early 70s. You know, two doors like Chevelles and Torinos you know, some of the Challengers and Chrysler products, and I told him what he could buy affordably, and we kind of nailed it down. So that's kind of, I'll do that. I'll help you buy a new car if you need some advice on that, need some advice on the value of yours. All you have to do is send me the VIN number and the specifications on the vehicle, what kind of options it has on it, and the condition. You know, we'll talk a little bit about that, and I'll tell you what it's worth. And then you go shopping, you'll know, you know, what you're dealing with, and if they won't give you enough for it, I will. I'll write you a check, and it won't bounce. All right. Thank you for listening to this edition of My Car Guru, and I'll see you next time.